The writer Clay Shirky has been monitoring the free time we have in our lives, and over the past several decades, he says we've spent a lot of that time doing just one thing.
Television became essentially an unpaid halftime job for every man, woman, and child in the developed world, right? 25 hours a week or so, times a couple billion people.
New research shows the internet is eating up more and more of our TV watching time.
Clay Shirky writes about this sea change in his new book, Cognitive Surplus.
A cognitive surplus is my phrase for the cumulative time and talents of the networked world, because we're all networked together. We can share things. We can take on projects larger than what one person can do in their basement. And so the cognitive surplus is the reason we have, you know, billions of photos on Flickr and 24 hours a day of video being uploaded every minute on YouTube. It's the reason we have Wikipedia and open source software. The amount of time and talent we have to swing to shared problems and civic action is incredibly vast.
But there's also a lot of cute kitty sites on the web.
The internet is fueled by cute cats, yeah.
And in fact, I can waste just as much time looking at cute kitty sites as I ever could watching sitcoms. So what's the balance?
Right. But the interesting thing about lolcats, about these cute cats made cuter with the application of cute captions, is that when you see a lolcat, you get a second message, which is you could play this game too. Right? When you see something on television, the message is, you could not do this. You can only consume this. There is a giant gulf between doing something and doing nothing. And someone who makes a lolcat and uploads it, even if only to crack their friends up, has already crossed that chasm to doing something. That's the sea change. And you can see it even with the cute cats.
And I see it in a very nice anecdote that you have in your book about a little girl who's watching a video. Mm. And she gets up off the couch and she goes to the back of the TV. Yeah. And her father thinks, oh, she wants to see the characters and see where they are. But what she's looking for is the mouse. It's inconceivable to this four-year-old that you can have television that you can't interact with.
I mean, you see this with kids. I see this with my kids all the time. They'll see a screen out in public and they go up and they touch it because they assume that it's going to respond to them. People who are used to those opportunities will both look for them when they're young, but I'm also imagining will design around them when they're older. When they come to start making media, they're going to start assuming that other people will have some kind of input as well.
There's always a list of losses that accompanies
yes.
any new technology, and there is a cottage industry of hand-wringers.
More than a cottage industry, let me tell you.
And let me give them their voice. One is vanishing attention span. Deep right. reading is right. gone. Social right. polarization.
Right. The social polarization one is, in my mind, the most interesting. Cass Sunstein kicked this off with Republic.com and the worry about the echo chamber. What's so interesting now, though, about the echo chamber is that the political movement in the United States that is, in a way, most consistently creating an environment where the opinions are internally consistent and resistant to dialogue is the Tea Party. And yet, the Tea Party is characterized by the people who grew up in the old media landscape. The Tea Party is one of the few protest movements in the U.S. not driven by teenagers and people in their early 20s.
But I am told that they wouldn't exist without an internet way.
Oh, no, of course.
To
everybody,
meet up.
Everybody uses the internet all the time. Even the hand-wringers use the internet. The interesting thing to me about the echo chamber argument is that it actually seems to have been a description not of the internet, but rather of the world of three television stations and one local newspaper, which is to say the media landscape of the 20th century, with its incredible paucity of sources, created more of an echo chamber than what we're seeing today.
You document some important social networks. There's one in Kenya that mapped information like election violence, and it actually helped people stay away from places that they could get hurt. There's a website called Patients Like Me where people share their symptoms and actually improve care for patients. When you look on balance at this evolving landscape, do you see more patients like me than lolcats in a way that you can tell which way it's going?
Well, I don't believe there's a which way question. We don't actually have to choose. We can have both lolcats of the cute cats. And we can have patients like me. Let me bring out Harvey Suedos, who's an American novelist, and I quote him in the book, who said in the middle of last century, you know, are paperback books going to flood the market with trash, or are they going to mean that we have access to the classics? And the answer to that question, of course, was why pick? right? The abundance of paperback books meant we could have all of both. So I don't think there's a trade-off between how many lolcats and how many patients like me sites are there. I think the trade-off is how well are we going to support things like patients like me, which are trying to transform medical research culture. So the thing we need to be concentrating on is finding the people who are going after creating civic value and helping them, regardless of the entertainment value of the cute cats.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Clay Shirky teaches at the Interactive Telecommunications Program at New York University. His new book is called Cognitive Surplus.
Well, of course, we reached out to Facebook and Twitter to find out what you had to say about your cognitive surplus.
One comment came from Greg Coulter. When I write anything or take pictures or make movies, it's almost with the intent of posting it on the internet.
Kathy Swink writes that the internet has inspired her to get more creative in the kitchen.
She says TV cooking shows are too slow for her taste, and they don't offer tips and tweaks from others.
Pete Mortensen says the internet has made him more, quote, fake productive. You can communicate with our incredibly productive staff at Morning Edition's Facebook page or on Twitter at Morning Edition or at NPR Inskeep. Our program is directed by Van Williamson and Lindsay Totte. The production staff includes Claudette Heberman, Steve Monroe, Vince Pearson, Leah Scarpelli, Selena Simmons-Duffin, Joanna Stein, Travis Larchuk, and Chris Benderev, with Ben Bergman and Melissa Yeager-Miller at NPR West. Our executive producer is Metallica Sicka.
The executive director of news programming is Ellen McDonald. Morning Edition's theme music was written by B.J. Lederman and arranged by Jim Pugh. I'm Deborah Amos, in for Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep.